You all had nothing in it. You already had all the stops that you needed. You already did the federal constitution and the Wyoming constitution. Senate File 102 has one mechanism in it, two state statutes, totally trash. Our law enforcement really don't work for the federal government. It still has qualified immunity in it, by the way, which would allow the police officer to shoot somebody in the back.
Wow. Talk about telling some whoppers. Here we go. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another installment from high above all other pedantic and puerile forms of Wyoming mainstream media. This is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming. Well, you can definitely tell that it's 2 weeks until Wyoming's primary election. Every time I open my mailbox, there's a new campaign flyer from somebody trying to convince me of something that they're not. Case in point, Representative Barry Crago in House District 40. His most recent flyer said, quote, proven results. What the heck does that mean? And what results could he be referring to? Well, we don't know because his flyer doesn't list any of them. So let me give you some of his proven results. There was his vote not to talk about the transgender sports bill. Oh, and then there was that one of letting Dan Zwanitzer off the hook without even an investigation, increasing the budget $113 million over and above what the governor wanted, voting to legalize pot twice, voting for Medicaid expansion. Well, one thing's for certain, those results definitely prove that he's not a conservative. Oh, but he certainly claims that to be the case. Every single one of his ads says proven conservative, trusted conservative, strong conservative. It's too bad that his voting record doesn't show anything of the sort. In fact, when you look him up on any voting index, I'm referring, of course, to WyoVote, WyoRhino, Evidence-Based Wyoming, all of them show Barry Crago is not anywhere close to the conservative members of the legislature. In fact, he's basically a liberal Republican. Here's what he had to say about Medicaid expansion.
I voted for it, and since then I've received, I can't tell you how many calls, emails, whatever, explaining why I should not have done that. And it was not a very popular position I took in our district at that point in time. And so sitting here tonight, I don't know where exactly I stand on that particular issue. I think it's going to depend on how the bill comes up and what the voters feel. And
this is fascinating. He says that was a totally unpopular vote to make, and yet he still doesn't know how he'd vote on it. Would you like to know why? He's waiting on the liberal elite down in Cheyenne to tell him how to vote. That one little soundbite is all you need to hear. In one breath, he says that his voters told him that was an unpopular vote, and the very next sentence, he tells you that he doesn't know how he's going to vote on it. This is a perfect example of the proven results that we have received from Representative Barry Crago. Moving on. On July 30th, I attended an event over in Gillette featuring Senator Anthony Bouchard, Bill Fortner, and several local Campbell County candidates. Bill Fortner is running for the Wyoming Senate in District 1. In that race, the incumbent is Senator Ogden Driscoll, and Bill Fortner and Roger Kinnett, whom you heard from earlier this week, are running for that seat. At the event, one of Representative Fortner's targets was the Second Amendment Protection Act, and nearly everything he had to say about it is not true. Honestly, I don't even think he's even read the bill. We're going to go through it piece by piece in just a second. But first, some totally egregious self-aggrandizement. You can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps. iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, really any of them will work. But the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There you can find all of the shows as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If your name is Representative Bill Fortner and you have no idea what a bill says, well, you can go to cowboystatepolitics.com and figure it out. just like you should have been doing before you opened your mouth and played fast and loose with the facts. This segment of the program is brought to you by 307 Cowboy Country. They are Central and Southeastern Wyoming's full line of Montana shed dealers. So if you're looking for a backyard shed to put all of your lawn equipment in, or a greenhouse, or maybe even a garage, you should call my friends Bryce and Melody Reese at 307-441-1815. They have the knowledge and expertise to get you the shed that you've been looking for. They even have the specialized equipment to place it anywhere on your property that you want. So give them a call. 307-441-1815. Montana Shed Center. Buildings for life. Okay, so on July 30th, I go to this event over in Gillette. And it was Anthony Bouchard and Bill Fortner, this guy named Larry Williamson, who he's going to run on the Constitution Party against Representative Chris Knapp. Basically, it's all of the Wyoming gun owners crowd. And as we know, most of those folks have your illustrious host blocked, so I can't see what they're posting on social media. And there's only one reason that you would block a journalist. It's because you don't want them to hear what it is that you're saying or putting on social media. Because maybe you're afraid that I'll expose it for the bullcrap that it is. And that's pretty rich, coming from some people that begin their speech talking about government transparency. Let me give you an example. Here's how Representative Bill Fortner began his speech on July 30th.
I guess the first thing I want to talk about is transparency. Can everybody hear me? I got my hearing aids in so I can hear myself real well. Transparency is a huge thing.
I completely agree, Bill. Is that why all your cronies have me blocked? Because of transparency? Because, you know, it's a big thing. Here it is again, just so we don't forget it.
I guess the first thing I want to talk about is transparency. Can everybody hear me? I got my hearing aids in so I can hear myself real well. Transparency is a huge thing.
Well, after that whole bit, then he started ripping on the Second Amendment Protection Act. Here's the whole thing, and then we'll go back and talk about it piece by piece. Now, the audio is not good, and Bill Fortner mumbles a lot, but you can hear the main points of what he says. Here it is.
Senate File 102 has four mechanisms and two state statutes. Totally trash. Our law enforcement when we go to work for the federal government. One of the law enforcement, the other is our right to carry law. We have two statutes in place that work against that Sapper bill that they passed. Well, it works in favor of that Sapper bill that passed to weaken our constitutional rights. We was warned by the 10th Amendment, by Patriot groups, and we were warned by several other constitutional groups not to sign that bill. That bill had nothing in it. We already had all the stops that we needed in it. Already the federal constitution and the Wyoming constitution. So anyways, this bill, it didn't have in it, it still has qualified immunity in it, by the way, which would allow a police officer to shoot somebody in the back. That's how we were down here in 19. Shot a guy three times in the back, got off with it, no punishment for the officer. The bill still has in it that they can seize your constitutional right temporarily. Now, what's that is temporary. So some of these drug cases and some of these court cases go on for decades. So they're going to take your guns, they're going to stick them in a closet, and maybe you might get them back, probably you won't. But so, anyways, those two things is in there, and I had a guy ask me that voted for the bill, stood up on the vote for it, and said, "Well, what?" He said, "I trust law enforcement. If we don't want them in, we vote them out." Well, he's only telling half the truth. There's only one part of the law enforcement that we actually want. That's the sheriff. We don't elect the highway patrolman, we don't elect our local city cops. Those are appointed. So, technically, if we're going to promote bills like this, maybe we ought to just get rid of the other law enforcement and just run straight sheriff's work. Something that we're controlling, but that we can go without if we have to. If we insist on passing that legislation.
This whole thing is pretty amazing, coming from a sitting Wyoming representative. It doesn't really matter whether you like the Second Amendment Protection Act or not, whether you think it's strong enough or not. That's kind of irrelevant to this conversation. My point here is that we have to deal in facts. And the vast majority of what Bill Fortner had to say in that soundbite is just flat not true. So let me read to you Senate File 102, the Second Amendment Protection Act. As far as bills go, it's only a page and a half. But I suppose if you cut out all of the state mumbo jumbo that's on all the margins, it wouldn't even fit on one page. It's only four short paragraphs. The first one just lists the Supreme Court case that the Second Amendment Protection Act derives its authority from, and that's Prince v. the United States. That's the anti-commandeering doctrine. Here's the act. The legislature further declares that the authority for Wyoming Statute 914-201 through 914-203, that's the Second Amendment Protection Act, is provided by the findings in Wyoming Statute 68406. The first section. This state and all political subdivisions of this state are prohibited from using any personnel or funds appropriated by the legislature of the state of Wyoming or any other source of funds that originated within the state of Wyoming to enforce, administer, or cooperate with any unconstitutional act, law, treaty, executive order, rule, or regulation of the United States government that infringes on or impedes the free exercise of individual rights guaranteed under the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Section B. Nothing in this act shall limit or restrict a public officer, as defined in Wyoming Statute 65101, from providing assistance to federal authorities for the purposes not specifically identified in subsection A of this section. Nothing in this act shall be construed to prohibit Wyoming governmental entities from accepting federal funds for law enforcement purposes. Section C. Any public officer, as defined in Wyoming Statute 65101A, who knowingly violates subsection A of this is guilty of a misdemeanor punishable by imprisonment for not more than 1 year, a fine, or not more than $2,000, or both. Pretty simple, and it's not 13 pages long. So the first thing that Bill Fortner complains about the Second Amendment Protection Act is that it contains two different statute numbers. Here's what he said.
Senate File 102 has one mechanism and two state statutes. Totally trash. Our law enforcement really don't work for the federal government.
The first statute he's talking about is Statute 64406. That's the Wyoming Firearm Freedom Act. It most certainly does not trash law enforcement, and what it does is it says that the state of Wyoming has the authority to regulate all firearms that are manufactured in the state of Wyoming. You would think that Representative Bill Fortner would be in favor of that one, but here he's complaining that it trashes law enforcement. It definitely doesn't do that. The other statute listed in the Second Amendment Protection Act is 65101. That's the one that explains what a public servant is. Let me quote it to you. Government includes any branch, subdivision, or agency of the state of Wyoming or any city, town, county, school district, or special district within it. Basically, anyone who works for government is prevented from infringing on your Second Amendment rights. Again, you would think this would be something Bill Fortner would be in favor of. But the whole point here is this statute number doesn't trash law enforcement like Bill Fortner claims it does. Here's the second thing that he says about it. Now, this one's pretty difficult to hear. Remember, I mentioned the whole mumbling thing that he does? Listen to this one.
You know, I had nothing in it. You already had all the stops that needed to be in the Constitution and the Wyoming Constitution.
This bill had nothing in it. We already had all the stops we need in the Wyoming Constitution and the United States Constitution. Really, Bill? Is that why we've all been talking about having a Second Amendment Protection Act for several years? Because we already have all the protections that we need? No, and Bill Fortner doesn't believe that either. In fact, that's a completely different argument than he made on the House floor on March the 9th. He was complaining that the Second Amendment Protection Act didn't have enough teeth, which I completely disagree with, in that it has a year in jail penalty. I don't know about you guys, but a year in an 8x10 is a pretty big deterrent to me. Well, anyhow, here is the argument he made on the House floor on March the 9th.
102 is weak at best, in my opinion. And the reason I say that is because I got a letter from our law enforcement group at home, and the bill that the SAPO ran in 2001, they complained, and they sent me this letter in January asking me to vote against SAPA. And one of the reasons being was because SAPA bills have too many teeth to it, and it strips them of their protections, but they don't worry about our protections. And I think that's where we need to be at with this whole conversation, is Do we want a bill that's not got teeth in it to strip out the protections of government and put us first? Or do we want a weak bill that does nothing to protect us?
These are two completely different arguments that he's made. On July the 30th, he said that we don't need a SEPA bill because we have everything we need in the U.S. Constitution and the Wyoming Constitution. In all honesty, I happen to agree with him on that point, that we shouldn't have to have a SEPA bill, that the U.S. Constitution, the Second Amendment, is clear enough. In fact, it couldn't be any more clear. But the truth is, we do have to have a SEPA bill, which is why we passed the Second Amendment Protection Act. But that is a completely contradictory thing than what he said on March the 9th on the House floor. In the next piece, he's talking about qualified immunity. And what that is that a police officer cannot be sued if they're acting within the color of law during the normal course of their duties. If they're following the law and you get arrested for breaking the law, you can't sue them because you broke the law and got arrested. That's what qualified immunity is. But here's what Bill Fortner has to say about it. You're going to love this.
So anyways, this bill, it didn't have, you know, it still has qualified immunity in it, by the way, which would allow the police officer to shoot somebody in the back.
Qualified immunity does not allow a police officer to shoot somebody in the back and get away with it. How many trials have we seen recently where a suspect got shot and we had to determine in a month-long trial if it was a legal shooting? How many of them? This is just a complete mischaracterization of everything police officers do and the laws that protect them while they're doing their job. And the reason why qualified immunity is still in existence with the Second Amendment Protection Act is if it weren't, you wouldn't have a police officer. You wouldn't be able to hire one because nobody is going to put everything that they have up for grabs just for doing their job. And secondly, if a police officer violates the law while they're at work, they are not covered by qualified immunity. So not only is this a complete mischaracterization of what the Second Amendment Protection Act does and says, it's a complete mischaracterization of law enforcement, claiming that they're going to shoot somebody in the back and get away with it. It's just a repugnant argument all the way around. The very next thing he said was equally outrageous. I mean, it's completely not true. Here it is.
The bill still has in it that they can seizure the constitutional right temporarily. Now, what's the fact that temporarily? So some of these drug cases and some of these court cases go on for decades. So they're going to take your guns, they're going to stick them in a closet, and maybe you might get them back, probably you won't. But, so anyways, those two things is in there, and I had a guy ask.
All right, that's enough. Okay. I just finished reading the entire bill. What Bill Fortner says is in there, it's just not true. In fact, the bill does exactly the opposite of what Bill Fortner says it does. Okay, one last soundbite in this segment of the program. One of the very last things that Bill Fortner does is he basically accuses another representative of not telling the truth. Pretty ironic, given everything that we've looked at in this episode, to where Bill Fortner is completely mischaracterizing the Second Amendment Protection Act. But just so you can hear the irony in this whole thing, here it is.
Well, he's only telling half the truth. There's only one part of the law enforcement that we actually want, that's successful.
I'm not sure who the pot or the kettle is, but it's pretty ironic anyway. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to talk with Sarah Parker Penn, who is running for the House of Representatives in District 33. You're going to love what she has to say. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for an outbuilding or a garage or a roping arena or a giant warehouse or a barn or any type of metal structure that you could possibly come up with, well, then you need to call my friends Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings, 307-674-2532. These guys are the experts in what they do. They've been building metal structures longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do it better than anybody else around. So it doesn't matter what you've got in mind for your property, give Nick and Jesse a call. Again, it's 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com.
I observe them grow state government, spend money like drunken sailors, avoid passing pro-life legislation, and not care about what their constituents want.
Alan Slagle is running for House District 2. He's a principled conservative, a rancher, and a family man.
We should be willing as a state to call him out and say, this isn't constitutional.
And he will. Vote Alan Slagle for House District 2 on August 16th. Right now is the highest we've ever seen gun markets, and the best performers are the vintage collectible firearms, Winchesters, Colts, and rare military weapons. Over in Cody, Gunrunner Auctions is one of the leading online auction houses in the country, and they're celebrating their 23rd year. Gunrunner Auctions is unique in that their specialty is estate firearms. They get calls all week long about lifelong gun collections coming to auction. Scott Weber, the owner, has been into firearms for almost 60 years, and he'll travel to the estate and first appraises the firearms for the heirs and then takes them to his Cody auction facility where he and his team research them, sometimes getting factory letters from the Cody Museum to learn more about each firearm's history. Every month, beginning on the 7th, Scott and his crew post 500 fine firearms for sale. All of them start at $20 with no reserve. They've sold the personal collections of Elvis Presley, Steve McQueen, Alex McCord, and Herb Parsons, just to name a few. With their 40,000 bidders in all 50 states, they'll realize the highest prices for your precious firearms. That's GunrunnerAuctions.com. And now, back to the program. Yesterday, I had a chance to visit with Sarah Parker Penn, who is running for the House, the Wyoming House, in District 33. We had a great discussion. Here it is. Joining me this morning via Zoom is Sarah Penn. Sarah is running for the Wyoming House of Representatives in District 33. Welcome to Cowboy State Politics, Sarah.
Thanks, David. I'm glad to be here.
So, first question, always an easy one. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, okay. So, I grew up on a horse and cattle ranch. My family is in the, we have a family business, and that business is livestock sales. I come from three generations of auctioneers, mostly livestock auctioneers. And growing up, I learned how to work hard. I had a lot of different jobs. I mowed lawns for my grandpa for $1 an hour, which I thought was pretty good money. And I graduated from that up to halter breaking baby colts out in the hot sunshine and loved every minute of it. Part of the family business was, and actually the majority of the family business when I was younger, was traveling around the country putting on horse sales. From that, I learned a lot of the importance of making good relationships with people. And of course, the importance of hard work. When you have a entrepreneurial business, if you don't work hard, you don't eat. And so I learned the importance of doing a job well and choosing the important things. My family owned the local sale barn, and so I worked there as well, doing every job from checking in cattle to cleaning the toilets at the end of the day, and learned the importance of finding a career that you love and that you can go to work and do without feeling like you're doing work. My family, my husband is a school teacher. He teaches shop classes out here on the reservation. I'm a nurse practitioner. I've spent nearly a decade in the emergency room, and lately, for the last 8 years since we've been here in Fremont County, I've done urgent care, which I absolutely love. We've got three little kids, and they really are our motivation for making sure that we're standing up for the things that are right.
All right. So then, sounds like you're a busy person. Why in the devil are you running for the state legislature?
So, yes, we are very busy. But as I said before, if you prioritize things and see what really is most important, you've got to get those important things in first. And being in healthcare and seeing what I saw with the mismanagement of COVID and all that had happened in such a short time, these lockdowns and these mandates and all these things coming down so quickly, and recognizing that, you know what, we've got to do something. We've got to stand up here. And I expected that, especially in Wyoming, I would see a surge of people stand up and say that, you know, what's happening here isn't right. It's not okay. And I was actually, unfortunately, disappointed in the response that I did see. And so I took it upon myself to say, okay, we've got to do something about this. And so ultimately, I ended up starting a group. It's called Wyoming Citizens for Liberty. And we started watching the legislature this last session and seeing how it was going to protect us from some of these COVID overreach situations, watching these bills that would protect us from vaccine passports and mask mandates. And thinking that my local legislators and those throughout the state would be standing up for the things that we wanted and we thought were right. And we were in communication with them, emailing them and calling them. Unfortunately, we didn't get much response from the majority of them, but the ways that they were voting, the only word that I keep coming up with is disgusting. I was disgusted at what they claimed to stand up for and represent. And that was not how they were voting. And so, you know, we started saying, okay, what can we do to the process in this great country is if we're not happy with those who are representing us, then we need to vote them out. And that's, so long story short, here I am. And I do feel called to be here. I feel led to do this work. Even though it's hard, it's worthwhile and it's important so that my children, can have the liberties that I enjoyed as a kid.
Well, you're exactly right. I was down in Cheyenne during the special session. And, you know, the day that the session opened, that Capitol building was packed to capacity. And you could tell that everybody on that floor knew exactly what was happening. You know, they kept looking up at the gallery and, you know, it was obvious they knew they were being watched. Well, that was the first day. And then the second day, everybody had to go back to work. And then it was business as usual in that Capitol building. And, you know, I broke a story about legislators taking money from pharmaceutical companies and medical lobbying groups. In fact, everybody that voted against the special session took campaign donations from those outfits. And so I'm on board with you saying that their behavior during the special session was nothing short of disgusting.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So let's talk about your race. Who are you running against?
So the incumbent is Andy Clifford. My district is very unique in Wyoming in that it is not largely Republican. In fact, we are almost a 50-50 split here between Democrat and Republican because this district encompasses the reservation. So Fort Washakie and Ethedee and Arapaho. And generally, those people tend to vote Democrat. So Andy Clifford, you know, of course, this is always a close race. I think that part of the reason that I'm doing this is the people deserve better representation. For the past several years, while she's been in, nearly 50% of this district has had virtually no representation whatsoever. And honestly, the other 50% has been poorly represented.
Okay. So if I were to ask you, what are the three big issues that you're running on? What would those be?
So my biggest thing, and you know, I'm not a politician. So for me to say, okay, well, these are going to be my platform. Sometimes that's a difficult thing. But I'm just mostly running on the fact that I'm a conservative. And so I feel like, you know, there's the saying, this world needs more cowboys. This world needs more conservatives as well, because conservatism a lot of times can be the answer to a lot of our struggles. And that doesn't exclude the reservation out here. I feel like the people get led to believe things that are not true. And a lot of promises get made that don't get followed through. And sometimes I feel like people make promises that they don't really ever intend to make good on. And so my first thing would definitely just be conservatism and standing up to restore conservatism to our state and to our legislature. With conservatism, of course, comes, in my opinion, the promotion of life. So I am pro-life and will always be such. That's something that is part of my basic beliefs, and that's not something that I could be enticed to flip on by, someone offering me something special. And the same goes with the Second Amendment. I believe that it's our natural right to be able to protect ourselves. And that right comes from God. It doesn't come from government. The government is present to protect that right. And so definitely continue to be a proponent of the protection of life and life itself.
So my next question would be, conservatism seems to be like a big plank in your platform. And mm-hmm. probably one of the biggest things that Wyoming is facing right now is our lack of fiscal conservatism. Now, your husband is in education, so let's talk about education for a minute.
Yes.
A lot of legislators have said that if we don't get a handle on our education spending, that very soon it's probably going to bankrupt the state of Wyoming. So with that in mind, how would you propose that we get a handle on our education budget?
I absolutely agree that our education system and our education budget needs a lot of attention. First of all, so I'm a follower of Dave Ramsey, and what he puts out is that if you don't know where your money's going, you can't make it work for you. So first off, we need to understand where it is that the money is actually going. You point out on your show often that our student enrollment numbers have decreased while our numbers of staff have increased. And yep. And we need to figure out why that is. What are those positions, those new positions that have been created, what are they accomplishing? Our system is very top heavy. In Fremont County alone, we have 8 districts. I can practically see 3 of them from my house if I were to stand on a roof. 8 districts. My husband's district has probably, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's probably less than 800 students in the entire district. And then just a couple miles down the road is another district, and a few miles in another direction is another. And so we're very top heavy with administration. For what? What is it accomplishing, and what is it getting us? Are we seeing skyrocketing test scores with the more money we spend? We aren't. And so we need to figure out where is that money going, and critically evaluate each job. What does that job intend to accomplish? Is it being accomplished? Can it be accomplished in another way? Can we consolidate things? So first off, I think we just need to know where our money's coming from, and then see where we can make some consolidations. I think we have a lot of room for that. The other idea that I've looked at a little bit as far as decreasing our spending is what are we doing with our school sports? So I think that school sports are wonderful. I think that they do great things for our kids through socialization and through learning skills. Also, they help kids earn scholarships to be able to go to college. And so I think that we have a lot to gain from our school sports, and I would never advocate eliminating school sports. But I think, once again, if we start looking at where's the money going and is it actually necessary, I think that we can make up some ground in our school sports. Does each high school need to have its own freshly turfed football field?
No.
Or yeah. I totally agree with you. So there are a lot of ways that we can consolidate, because a lot of money gets spent with sports. My husband is a coach, and he's been at districts, and I don't know for sure if this is a statewide rule or if this is by district, but some places, when they go on school sports trips, you know, they provide the busing, of course. The students to be on those teams don't pay extra fees, as far as I understand, for the most part. Their uniforms and those types of things are generally provided. And they also, my husband says, they've been required in some situations that if they go on a trip, they must feed the kid at least one meal. That's part of their requirement.
Right.
And I thought to myself, that doesn't seem, you know, if school sports, while very necessary, is also an extra. It's not something that we have to have in order to survive. And so there are other ways to accomplish those things. We can fundraise, we can go to the community. The community loves to support our kids. And so with a little bit extra effort on the part of the students and their families, which is also a life building skill to go out and work for something and have ownership in that thing, can provide other great things for our students. And so that's another thing to look at.
Well, you know, you brought up Dave Ramsey, and while I don't listen to his show very often, he brings up a couple of big points, right? That you need to make a priority list of things that you have to have, and then all the way down to the things that are, you know, luxuries. And
yes,
in my mind, when we have test scores that fall, the older kids get, I mean, that ought to be a priority. When you look at the amount of money that we spend per student, and it's approaching $20,000 a year. That's the most of just about any other state in the country. And yet we're, you know, maybe middle of the pack with our educational outcomes. So obviously we're not focusing on education like we ought to be. Let's talk about another place where government is bloated, state government. Wyoming has about 800 state employees for every 10,000 citizens. So the town that I live in, probably 40% of the people that live here work for government. What areas would you attack first in looking at the size and scope of the state budget?
Well, that's a really good question. That's not something that I've spent too much time looking at this point. Like I said, I'm new to politics, and I'm mostly just a citizen who's been kind of awakened lately. I think that as I applied with education, we really need to examine where is the money going, and find, you know, we've of course already talked education, which is probably the largest portion of our budget. But starting to look at that each entity, government agency individually, and looking at their outcomes and what is it that they are intending to accomplish and what are they actually accomplishing? And then starting to work through that agency by agency to make sure that we're being efficient. We, like you just mentioned, we've forgotten the difference between needs and wants. And we've come accustomed to thinking that things that we want are things that we need. And that is government as well. So are all of the agencies that we have and the positions within those agencies, are they necessary and are they accomplishing what they purport to accomplish?
Oh, I think you're exactly right. You know, there's lots of examples of that. I mean, I've heard lots of stories of where in state government, you'll have a supervisor that only supervises one employee. I mean,
yes,
it's just simple things that, you know, that you would think common sense would dictate we do the opposite. And yet, for some inexplicable reason, we don't. So let's do like some quick hot button topics. Where are you with Medicaid expansion?
Being in healthcare, I see the healthcare side of Medicaid expansion and what it does to doctors and clinics. Just yesterday, in fact, I had a discussion with a constituent whose husband is a physician, and you know, looking at the rural nature of our communities, and that people are struggling to find good, adequate healthcare, and She brought up the point that they have difficulty seeing a lot of Medicaid patients and such, because the reimbursement is just, it just doesn't make it worth it. And so you look at what Medicaid expansion claims to solve, and I absolutely think that people need to be cared for. But is it the responsibility of the government to ensure that the people have health care? I don't think that it is. I think that the more that we expand government in that way, the more difficult we're going to find the situation. I don't think that getting government for more deeply involved than it already is is the answer. We need to turn our healthcare situation back to fair market and competition, and that's what drives prices down. I believe that Medicaid expansion is only going to create the opposite. While its proponents claim the opposite, they think that it will decrease costs. But from a healthcare standpoint, I just don't see that.
Well, no, I mean, they're including government in yet another sector of our economy. Give me one example where that's actually driven down prices. It never has. All right. Absolutely so not. Another thing that I've interviewed a couple of people here recently that have brought this up. Where are you with legalizing pot?
I'm against the legalization of pot. You look at increasing government. There's no way for you to legalize marijuana without increasing the size of our government, for one, which I'm against. I am for small government, and anything that is going to substantially increase government, even if people claim that there is room for good in that. I would have to have some serious conversations with the person for them to explain to me how they think that would work out. Talking to law enforcement officers from other states, Colorado, who have that, and them saying, what they saw happen in their state, and especially from a law enforcement perspective, they said it's just devastating. Proponents of legalization of marijuana like to point out every possible positive aspect that could be gained, and they tend to leave out the negatives, which in my opinion far outweigh the positives.
Absolutely. If you want to know what's going to happen to your state if you legalize pot, just take a little trip south and you'll see the devastating impacts of marijuana. I mean, in Colorado, the homeless population tripled. I mean, it of course it didn't happen overnight, but it certainly appeared that way. And then, of course, if you look at the size of government, you're going to have the expansion of government that's going to be necessary to regulate it. I mean, the costs are just astronomical.
Yes, people claim that it will be a tax boost because we can start taxing these things that people are already doing, that's an argument, but it's not an argument that holds water really, because the fiscal responsibility that will come with legalization, there's no way that the revenue that comes from that will be sufficient to cover the cost of it.
Sarah, I really do appreciate your time visiting with me on the program. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about that we didn't hit?
All over this country, Wyoming is not immune. We're talking about our economic security and how can we promote that because of what's happening with the, our natural resources and things that way. I came across this quote that talked about kind of the process that creates economic security. And basically they say that you get economic security from widespread abundance. Wyoming has widespread abundance. We are very blessed in this state to have a lot of natural resources and a lot of things that have potential to create income for us. But that abundance is not going to happen, or it's impossible without the industrious and efficient production of that. And in order to have such production, we must have willing and eager labor. Willing and eager labor isn't possible without incentive. And so, you know, with my district encompassing the reservation, incentive is something that we need more of. In my opinion, capitalism is something that is incentive driven, and it works. In history, it works. And if we can work to increase the incentives for all to help raise themselves out of whatever situation they might be, through the legislature and through citizen engagement, see what we can do to help increase the incentive increase the incentive to help someone attain a reward for their labors. I think that's the basis of our society is allowing the freedom to attain that reward and allowing people freedom to make their own choices. And if you get government out of people's way, people can accomplish amazing things. And so, again, as a conservative and as a legislature, that would be a goal of mine that I think could make a difference in Wyoming, is just work to cut the red tape, work to allow people to get out and be industrious and use the abundance that we've been blessed with.
Well, I think you bring up an excellent point, is that capitalism is always the answer. Can the government create economic development?
No, I think that government, I think that would be an oxymoron. It's really the opposite. If government is saying that they're doing these things to create economic development, it's what they're really doing is what I would call legalized plunder. You can't take from someone else and give to another and expect that in time that's going to continue to thrive. People are industrious and people have the ability to do amazing things, and government only gets in the way.
So then the next question is, so what do you think about the Wyoming Business Council?
I think that there is a lot of room for improvement there. I think that they have goals which seem worthwhile, you know, that we, like you bring up the economic development. But what we've been seeing in our own communities here lately is I've been, you know, attending city council meetings and things is they work by taxing the people, and then you have unelected appointed people who take that tax money and then decide how they feel it necessary to be distributed among private businesses and things, and they're choosing winners and losers, and that is definitely not a function of government. And once again, we just need to eliminate those types of entities and allow the people and allow the free market to dictate where development goes.
Music to my ears, Sarah. So then what is the proper role of government?
The proper role of government, government exists solely, in my opinion, to protect the enjoyment of life, liberty, and property. It doesn't guarantee those things. It leaves it up to the people to decide what they're going to do with that. But it is for protection of those things and those things alone.
Excellent. Well, Sarah, I really appreciate you taking the time to visit with me this morning. If people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Yeah, so I've got a website. It's sarahpenn4hd33.org. I'm also on Facebook under that same Sarah Penn for HD33. My phone number is 307-209 0159, and you're welcome to call or text me anytime. Through my website, you can get my email as well, and I'm happy to chat with anyone about their concerns or their questions. Yeah, look me up and get your questions answered. I wouldn't ask somebody to vote for me simply because, you know, they saw my mailer. I think that, in fact, this is part of the reason, this is very, this is the reason that I am doing what I'm doing, is because I think that citizens have dropped the ball in their duty to be engaged and to hold their legislators accountable. And so I, as a legislator, would expect nothing less than being held accountable. I also expect people to do their part, to step up and make sure that that legislators are educated. You know, I've always thought that, or especially recently thought that we in a society have given our legislators too much power. The way that we've done that is we have kind of checked out. And so we then expect that our, you know, our representative becomes the expert on natural resources and the expert on how to reduce inflation and the expert on healthcare and the expert on this and that and the other, while the citizens go about, you know, going to the lake and little league games, and then get upset when things don't come out from the legislature the way that they had hoped. And largely we have got ourselves into this situation, and I'm not taking any blame for myself. That's why I'm here, is because I feel like as citizens, we need to be more engaged, and I can't ask someone else to stand up for what they believe in if I'm not doing the same thing myself. Please call me if you have any questions or concerns about my positions on things, or and I need education. Like I said, I'm new to politics, and I need the help of the people, because if the people are experts in their fields, then they need to keep me educated and help me understand how processes work, because I can't do it alone. And so I definitely encourage people to reach out to me.
Excellent. Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. Well, thank you again, Sarah, and keep me updated on how your race is going.
All right. Thank you, David, for having me.
That'll do it for this installment of the program. Have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk again on Saturday. From the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is Cowboy State Politics.